2013 might be the time of disclosure. It's coming, or at least it's coming if Stephen Bassett has anything to do with it and anything to say about it. He's a very determined man, and he's put together something here that I really want to tell you about. At the end of April and end of May at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., Stephen has put together a five-day extravaganza that will probably develop into a life of its own if the plans go right. It sounds like it has all the potential to do that. And when I say a life of its own, I mean it should develop or begat, as I say in biblical terms, people coming forward and talking about things. So let's talk to Stephen Bassett right off the bat. Stephen, how are you?
I'm just fine, Jerry. It's always good to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Tell our listeners a little bit about this incident and how you came about this. And it's not just a conference this time. It's really an event. It goes on for 5 days. And well, you tell them about it.
No, it's not a conference. It's part of the political advocacy process here, the truth movement, as it were, the disclosure movement, as many call it, rightfully so. PARG, Paradigm Research Group, has been pursuing the political resolution of the extraterrestrial issue for 17 years, along with other groups like the Disclosure Project and many others. And we're getting close, I think, to achieving the goal. And the goal is for the United States government, either because it goes first or because it has to follow the lead of one or more other governments around the world, who have gone forward to announce that their citizens aren't alone in the universe, that there's extraterrestrials engaging us now, almost certainly from other star systems, these systems which we're now finding by the millions, at least we're projecting by the millions to be out there and capable of sustaining life. This political advocacy is a chess game that's being played, and there are two key moves in this particular part of this end game that's underway. The first move was in September of 2011 when Paradigm Research Group got a disclosure petition into the White House website, which received enough response to generate a enough signatures to generate a response from the White House. That response came on November the 4th. And that response was not surprising and yet, but very helpful. And by that I mean this, that the government, through the Office of Science and Technology Policy, the White House stated on the record in writing for the first time that the U.S. government has no evidence that any life exists outside our planet or that an extraterrestrial presence has contacted or engaged any member of the human race. In addition, there is no credible information to suggest that any information is being hidden from the public's eye. This statement is completely false and indefensibly false, and it's in writing. And that was a milestone, and that was obtained in November 4th of 2011, and that remains up on the White House website now. You can go there and find it in the We the People section, as well as at the Disclosure Petition home base at disclosurepetition.org. Now, it is approximately 18 months later, April 29, we're going to hold a citizen hearing modeled after congressional hearings, and we're going to hold that in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. The ballroom there will be made to look as close to a hearing room as possible with committee table, witness tables, press sections, audience sections, and so forth. And over 5 days, this hearing will attempt to do what the Congress has failed to do, which is hear a testimony from a number of witnesses relating to this ET issue. The last time the Congress held such a meeting was hearing was 1968, 45 years ago. And so the motto of the citizen hearings, if the Congress won't do its job, the people will. But what makes this particular event unprecedented is the size, the length, the scope, and the presence of former members of Congress. This isn't a press conference lasting a couple of hours on a given day with media attending and then writing some stories. This is a hearing that will go on for 40 hours with breaks, 30 hours of testimony and Q&A. It will be before former members of Congress. The number of witnesses will be large, approaching 40, some of the strongest researchers in the world, as well as military agency and political witnesses. The total testimony will be very comprehensive, and it will be covered extensively by the media. We have a top independent publicist working full time to make sure that happens. But it gets better because we're going to live stream the whole thing. We're going to webcast the whole hearing to the world for the entire 5 days. And by the world, I mean that we're going to go through the top five languages in the world: English, Mandarin, Chinese, Hindi, Arabic, Spanish, and also Japanese. Those languages represent about half the world's population, 3.5 million. We will do simultaneously translation on all the other languages except English, of course, and they will also be an archive for availability after the hearing for 30 days. So this, the scope of this event, the reach of this event, the amount of press coverage is going to get is unprecedented.
So in essence, you're having all the movers and shakers in Washington, D.C. I mean, they're being notified now. They know about it. That some of them will probably show up. Have you got any indications that we're going to have a good turnout?
Well, who shows up remains to be seen. Movers and shakers don't announce they're going to come to something like this. There will be a public audience. We can handle up to 250. It is first come, first seated, no charge. And we expect that will be a public in attendance. But the fundamental point here in this chess game that's being played is that for those 5 days in front of the world, in front of a very substantial amount of media, we're going to present a huge amount of evidence that the White House said 18 months ago doesn't exist. And so essentially we are now putting the two together. Where the press is going to look at the White House formal written statement, which stands to this day on the White House website, and this massive evidence being presented at this hearing. And I think a lot of editors, reporters, and publishers are going to say, you know, this is getting ridiculous. I mean, how long can we continue to hide? How long can the government continue to hide the shell, right, or deny? Something's got to give. And so we're trying to create a triggering event that causes the press on a significant scale to go in investigatory mode. Once that happens, the truth embargo is finished. It cannot possibly survive a significant investigatory approach by mainstream media. It's done. And that is exactly what we're trying to accomplish. Now, furthermore, just to make sure that this doesn't get lost in the shuffle, we're going to film everything. And the citizen hearing will be the center of a documentary, a theatrical quality documentary that will be probably completed in the fall called Truth Embargo. And it will be the centerpiece but not the sole basis for this documentary. And so that will go out later in the fall. I should also mention that 7 days before the citizen hearing begins, another movie called Sirius about the Disclosure Project work and other work of Stephen Greer, which will include quite a bit of testimony by witnesses, as well as much more, will have its premiere in Los Angeles at a theater here April 22nd. And Disclosure, Sirius Disclosure, and that's S-I-R-I-U-S, SiriusDisclosure.com is where one can learn about it. It's sold out, but some tickets may come available. So that movie then is going to start spreading out across the country, depending upon how they choose to distribute it. It is directed by an Emmy-winning director, Amardeep Kalika, and have impact. Meanwhile, the citizen hearing is going to take place, and then you're going to have the publicity of that, and then, of course, there's going to be tremendous promotion of the Truth Embargo movie. All of this is coming at the Truth Embargo this year, on top of the fact that other nations are continuing to release files by the thousands, the most latest being Australia, of events, of sightings, of cases within that they have been covering. Smoking gun, perhaps not, but important cases, yes. This is just an enormous amount to absorb and pretend nothing is going on. And so the goal is to end the truth embargo this year, Jerry. It's that simple.
It makes one wonder, makes my head swim, thinking they've been able to cover this up for 65-plus years.
Embargo, not cover up. It wasn't illegal, right? It was state policy, national security-based, not nearly as justified since the Cold War ended. But they were able to do it because they spent a huge amount of money, right? They had all the resources of the intelligence community, which actually started – they started creating that community in bulk virtually at the same time that the ET phenomena exploded on the scene in 47. And, of course, those intelligence agencies and policies and functions were honed to a fine blade by the Cold War. We were, in fact, in a Cold War with the Soviets, which if we didn't win would have been rather consequential. We were also trying to avoid a hot war, a nuclear war, which would have destroyed civilization. This is a very difficult and stressful 44 years from 1947 to 1991. And all of the money and time and effort that went into the creating the vast secret empire that we built to defeat the Soviet Union, I guess, in the ideological struggle, all of that was available to the truth embargo that also had to be maintained and contained. They were trying to contain the Soviet Union by all means possible, some legal, some illegal. They were also trying to contain the acknowledgement of or the kind of formal public acceptance of the presence of extraterrestrials at the same time. They succeeded on both counts. They defeated the Soviet Union, which has now become a capitalist country, and they did contain the ET issue. The problem is that after the Soviet Union was defeated and the Cold War ended, they couldn't unravel the truth embargo. They couldn't back it out. A lot of things took place, and now that has become the problem. And so the U.S. government has a dilemma it must solve. And our job is to help solve that, Jerry. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to hold a critical mass event on April 29 to May 3. We're going to make sure the whole world knows about it. And we're going to make sure all the press are covering it, and they will. And we're going to try to convince the press that it's time to really challenge the government on this issue with all of the questions that could be asked, and there are thousands of them, for which the government has no answers really that are going to be convincing other than the truth, and put the administration of President Obama as well as the military intelligence community in a position where they have no choice but to send representatives from both sections, from the White House and from the military intelligence community, maybe one, maybe two, whatever, and to come together, meet behind closed doors, obviously, and arrive at an understanding as to what the president needs to move forward with disclosure and what the military and the intelligence community expects regarding disclosure in the interest of national security. Once they have had that meeting and once they've had that agreement, disclosure could then take place immediately. That's kind of the maneuvering and the game plan that we're following.
And following this game plan, people were aware you were going to do this for a little while, but now it's out there, pretty much official. Have you had any feedback from I used the term movers and shakers earlier, but political feedback, for instance?
We will find out soon because, Jerry, even though this was announced to the ET community way back in November and it's been kind of simmering, it has not had a major public launch, and we couldn't do that until we had our congressional committee set up, which we have. We're going to be seeking endorsements from political figures, from figures in the activist community, the entertainment activist community. And as those endorsements come in, they will be logged up on the website, which is citizenhearing.org, the home of all of this. In addition, Jerry, we have launched a foundation called the Citizen Hearing Foundation, which is will be a 501c3 charity, so that we can start garnering donations from anywhere in the world, from both individuals and corporations and other 501c3s, anywhere, any organization, who wish to see more citizen hearings. In other words, this isn't a one-shot deal. We think the citizen hearing concept is a major new advocacy tool. While mock hearings of a type have been done from time to time in colleges and universities and some local municipalities, there's never been one like this at this level, at this scope, involving former members of Congress. And so the concept of a citizen hearing where witnesses regarding an important area are able to come in and testify before former members of Congress in a congressional hearing type setting and have it filmed to the world – we think is a very powerful tool. The Citizen Hearing Foundation is designed to find the support so that we can hold more of these. And the next citizen hearing, if the first one goes as planned, and we have the support, will be the citizen hearing on contact. The first hearing is the citizen hearing on disclosure, stop, of an extraterrestrial presence engaging the human race. Contact will not be part of this particular hearing. It is a vast, deep, and complicated subject of its own. It will have its own hearing, the next one, which will be the citizen hearing on contact between humans and extraterrestrial intelligence. So you see what's happening here. You see where we're going.
I give that website again for people. I looked at it. It's pretty comprehensive already.
And you've started by the day. Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more added to it. Citizenhearing.org.
We also have citizenhearing.info.net.com, citizenshearing.info.net.com, or whatever. We got them all. Citizenhearing.org, that is the website. So and this is being made possible because of funding that's coming into this work. The Sirius movie got substantial funding, nearly $500,000. This project and the film got even greater funding than that. There's going to be more funding coming in. In other words, not surprisingly, more and more people, including people who want to see this ending, want to see this truth embargo ended.
Can you give me an idea of who, not necessarily name names, but who would be giving you funding? I mean, why would they want to do that? Are they, are people fed up with this embargo?
Sure. There are an increasing number of people in the country who have resources and no longer feel inhibited or afraid to fund this advocacy work. Believe me, the amount of funding we've had in this field going back to 47 is practically minuscule, but that is changing and it's only going to get better. There are huge amounts of money that go into advocacy issues in the United States and around the world, hundreds of billions of dollars every year. This field has got nothing. That's changing, and it won't take that much to end the truth embargo, frankly. It wouldn't. This is not as difficult as some of the other problems are trying to fund. You know, it's probably going to be a little easier to end the truth embargo than it is to save the whales in the Pacific, frankly. But in any event, these are individuals who see the extraordinary, who believe and are convinced the ET presence is real. That's a given. They see the enormous benefits that would come if we can finally get past this embargo and openly acknowledge this reality and address it as a collective species. And they're not afraid anymore that there will be any consequences to them, which happens to be the case. I do not believe that there are any consequences for people that want to support this work at this point, focusing in the ET area and the disclosure area. And so, Jerry, that's what's happening, and more money will come forward. You will see more projects, bigger projects, and the truth embargo will end. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's time.
I kind of flesh out for our audience exactly how this is going to work over the 5 days. Will it be one big room and one speaker, or will they branch off into groups, or how does it work, and how does the audience keep up with it all?
If you've ever seen a congressional hearing on television, the Iran-Contra hearings, the Watergate hearings, the Benghazi hearings, the tobacco and health hearings, and so forth, it's going to be like that. There will be a committee panel sitting in committee and in the front. There will be testimony tables in front of them. There will be audience seating to the side and behind those testimony tables. There will be press cameras behind that. There will be press sections to the left and right. There will also be balcony seating as well. It is one huge room with balconies and wings. Holding, well, it could easily hold 250 people plus full press sections and two VIP sections. The hearing will be broken up into 20 sessions, 20 panels, two in the morning, two in the afternoon, for 5 days. That's 20 sessions. Each session will be a panel of witnesses anywhere between 3 and 6, might more than 6, and they will then testify together. As is usually the case, when a panel begins, each of the panel members will read into the record a pre-written statement, which is the essence of their testimony, lasting no more than 10 minutes. Once those statements have been read into the record, the committee
will begin to question them about their statements and try to elicit whatever information the committee wishes to obtain. The role of these former members of Congress is not to proselytize. It's not to make the case for one approach or another. They are simply gathering information, just like they do when they served in committees in the Congress, information that the Congress would use to make policy, to pass laws, and so forth. So one should not assume that because someone is on this panel, this committee rather, that they have some strong belief in the ET hypothesis. Not necessarily at all. In fact, we don't care what their view is about the ET hypothesis. We do care. It's helpful if they've served on committees like the Science and Technology Committee, Defense Committee, Air and Space, the Armed Forces Committee, and particularly the Intelligence Committee. That's nice because that gives them a lot of exposure to somewhat relevant issues. So that's how it's going to operate. Soon we will, as soon as our witness pool is complete, we will put up on the website the scheduling of which panels and what fundamental areas that they're going to address. That is not up. It's not going to be up for a while. And people will have a sense of who's going to testify when. There will also be, and this is an add-on, it's simply taking advantage of the venue that we have leased. There are no hearing going on in the evening. So in the evening, in that same room, there will be lectures, three lectures a night, 50 minutes each. That's 15 lectures. And they are going to be given only by witnesses that are testifying. And so what these lectures will do is give the witness an opportunity to expand on the testimony that they were able to give, because there's limited time. I mean, you're in a panel of 3, 4, 5 people. You're only going to have so much time to talk about your particular perspective. They'll have 50 minutes to elaborate on that. And these lectures will also be live streamed to the internet, webcast worldwide. Now, while there will be 6 languages being translated, or rather, in addition to English, 5 languages being simultaneously translated for the hearings, the lectures in the evening will only be done in English and then translated into Spanish and archived. I should mention, in an effort to make this as accessible as possible and yet to raise the funds to pay for all this, because this is a really expensive project, the entire live stream, the entire webcast of the hearing, right, is all 40 hours is $3.80. And then
not a piece, not each session, all of it.
All of it, all 5 days, and then
$3.80.
And the archive of the hearing, which will also include the archive of the hearing, will be available for $3.80. And in English and Spanish, those that are able to subscribe in English and Spanish, they will be able to watch the entire hearing and the lectures that evening, all 15 of those, for the $3.80. And then in archive, those in Chinese. The Chinese will only be archived. It will not be live broadcast because the PRC is not going to allow live broadcast to go straight in. They will, though, if they approve of the archive, allow the archive to be accessible. So we're going to do our best to make this available to the 600-700 million people that do speak Mandarin Chinese in the world. And so all of that you can find at the website citizenhearing.org. So we're making it as accessible as possible, Jerry. We're hoping that people will take advantage of this, spread the word through the social media, through Twitter, through Facebook, and so forth, this link, citizenhearing.org, particularly to those friends they have in their social network outside the U.S., around the world, and say, look, tune in and see what's going on. Learn about this. And then decide whether you want to pressure your own government to come forward and finally tell the truth about this ET presence.
Yeah, you've been traveling internationally a little bit, and you and I've talked about it. Mm-hmm. And the UFO crowd internationally is actually a little more of an activist group than us, if I understand you correctly. When we were talking about it.
A little bit. The activist movement is mostly strongly based here, but the interest in the subject is very high overseas, and barriers to more personal, vocal statements, and maybe even engaging the media and the government, probably a little lower. Depends on the country. Recently, Jerry, a very telling poll was done. Most people are familiar with the Reuters and CNN polls and Time and all that are done. Polling is also done internationally. There have been a number of polls in the United States, Canada, the UK, regarding the UFO issue that generally show now about half the people in these countries believe that the phenomena that we've been seeing is UFO in some respect. I mean, is extraterrestrial in some respect, meaning there's extraterrestrials involved in it one way or the other. That's about 50%. About 85% or so believe the government is, in fact, not telling the truth. Ipsos, in conjunction with one of the U.S. polling operations, went out and tried to poll the whole world on the subject. Just a couple years ago, they tried to get a representative sample of all 7 billion people, and they went to 36 countries that they felt represented the world's people. And they asked them a very tough question, a much tougher question than is typically asked, not do you believe this phenomenon is extraterrestrial, meaning this ships and things flying around, maybe crop circles, whatever, this collection of phenomena. There's an extraterrestrial presence involved. They ask the world's people, do you believe extraterrestrials are living amongst us now? Extraordinarily, the result was 20% of the world's people believe already ETs are here now, living amongst us. That's approximately 1.5 billion people. The country with the largest response was India, which was 45% believed it's living amongst us. Not surprising, because the ET concept, the ET reality, is very rife throughout the religious and ancient lores of India. Now, I would add that I believe – I can't prove it, and I hope that eventually we get this poll – that had these nations and these people been asked a more basic question, do you believe this phenomenon is extraterrestrial, the response would have been more in the 50% range average across the world, similar to what we have in the UK, United States, and Canada, and possibly the response to that in India could have been up to 70% range. These are massive numbers. And while some skeptics might say, or debunkers rather, might say, well, that's all the stupid people in the world, that would be a lie. And that's all the debunkers do, basically, is lie. That's their job, is to lie. They're propagandists, basically. In fact, the polling shows that the higher incomes, the higher education, the more the poll is skewed towards a positive response. So, again, you get a perspective on what's going on. And so if you travel around the world, you have no trouble encountering interest in the subject. Now, some of the governments very closely tied to the United States, like Germany, like Australia, and others have been particularly tight-lipped about this. However, that's changing. Australia finally started releasing its UFO files, joining Canada, the UK, and New Zealand not too long ago. I think there's activity going on in Germany. Japan, of course, has huge interest in the subject. China has huge interest in the subject. And so the governments of the world are sending a message in one way or another that the U.S.'s position, its leadership of this truth embargo, is no longer good policy, and it needs to end. And while we are an important nation with a powerful economy, I don't think the Obama administration will be making a huge mistake if it thinks that all these other countries are simply going to stand and do nothing on this because we're so great and powerful. We're not viewed that way anymore. We're viewed as highly vulnerable, very dysfunctional, and enmeshed in our own problems. And so any one of these nations could take unilateral action in their own best interest. And so it's up to the U.S. to decide, is it going to go first or is it going to follow? And this is a message we're going to continue to give to the administration and to the military intelligence community that stands to lose a great deal if the United States ends up following a communist China or Russia, and having to acknowledge after the fact, after another nation has come forward, that, oh, yeah, we've been lying to you too, and we're sorry, but here's the truth. We don't want that. It's going to diminish our prestige. It's going to diminish our influence in the world. So if I'm in the military intelligence community, I should be getting on the disclosure train right now.
Let's talk about getting into the disclosure hearing again, the citizens' hearing here. There's limited seating there, and you said no charge. So how does that work? Do you have tickets, or people just show up first come, first served?
It's like with a regular congressional.
Yeah, in person, right.
Seated. We will empty the room after the morning, each morning session, so that people in line for the afternoon section will have a chance to see it as well. And obviously, those in the morning may get back in line if they wish. So we will essentially have what amounts to 10 seatings, I guess you could say. Hopefully, we could handle as many as 1,000 people, different people over that week. We'll see. But anyway, we're not doing tickets. First come, first seat. And then the protocols for the hearing, citizen hearing, will be the same as a congressional hearing. And those will all be handed out to everybody. They'll know that this is being run like a hearing, and we expect people to act accordingly. We expect people to dress accordingly. If there's any breach of these protocols, then we will have to take measures to ensure that order is maintained for this hearing to go forward in the public interest.
Do you expect anybody to interrupt it? I mean, would there be any percentage for somebody to do that?
Congressional hearings are disrupted all the time, Jerry.
I know.
It's part of our vibrant democracy. I get it. We understand that. And so it's something that you prepare for. There are limits. You can allow a bit of disruption, but at some point, you know, you have to go forward with the public's business. And we do believe that we're doing the public's business here.
How do you feel about the overall attempts that you have made to get things on the presidential White House website, the We the People section? Now, the first one, you got a lot of people on there. It seemed to me like there might be some hanky-panky or technical problems or something going on after that.
Well,
it's almost like it was on purpose.
Yeah, it's possible. The We the People project was not a bad idea, and not surprisingly, the people responded powerfully. Tens upon tens of thousands of petitions started pouring in. The White House panicked. They go, oh, my God. Apparently, these people really want to do engage the government. My goodness. So they raised the threshold for a White House response from 5,000 to 25,000 signatures. But we had already gotten in the first petition under the gun there. We'd gotten cleared. We put in 5 more petitions since. But when they raised the threshold to 25,000 signatures, the amount of, I guess you could say, traffic, I think, kind of dried up.
All the air went out of the initiative. You know, I mean, people started thinking, well, 25,000, that's a lot of people. I don't think we can get there. 5,000, they thought they could get there.
Sure, but nevertheless, you know, 25,000 was doable. And we went back in, and we went back in a second time full bore. But then things started happening. The site started breaking down. It had all kinds of problems, and it just really made the whole petition process very difficult, so that the efforts to get the 25,000 signatures for the next 2 disclosure petitions really failed, partially because the site wasn't working. It was just a mess. But the process went on. More petitions were submitted by people around the country. I don't know how many have been submitted overall. It's probably well over 100,000. At some point, however, they had to raise the threshold to 100,000 signatures, which is probably the end of that process. The White House underestimated, as almost all of government does, the thirst that the American people have, not only for the truth, but for a real engagement of government, as opposed to the propaganda, the nonsense, the lies, the misdirection, the deception, and so forth. And they misunderstood it. They underestimated it, and as a result, got overwhelmed. Now, maybe they've learned a lesson, and they need to come up with other ways for us to engage them and to go about it in such a way as they can handle the degree of interest. But in any event, we got our petition in. We got our response, and that response is the other pole of this polar move we're making here, this polarity, this chess move we're making. The White House has firmly stated there is no evidence whatsoever. We're going to put huge amounts of evidence right in front of the media. Something is wrong there, okay? Either the White House is deliberately lying, or the White House is unaware of all of this evidence, which is available in the public domain and has been for decades, and somehow they missed it all. Now, if they want to answer it that way, they can say, gee, we just didn't know about these UFOs. We didn't know about this ET stuff. Nobody told us. If they want to say that to the media, they're welcome to do so. I don't think it'll go over very well. Or they can say, yeah, we know about it. There may be something here. Well, then that's a whole other ballgame. I mean, what can I say, Jerry? They handed us a gift in November.
Mm-hmm.
They handed us a gift. And I still believe, I believe to this day there is a very good possibility that that gift was not an accident. That in a position where they could not possibly say anything favorable or give any credence to the fundamental call for disclosure, because that would have created immediate political problems. What they did was give us an absolute denial, knowing that we would take that denial and use it like a can opener to pry open the can that represents the truth on this issue. And so one day we may learn that that was not an accident, and in which case it was a brilliant strategic move on the part of the White House, to be quite frank.
Okay. We're almost out of time. Let's run over this in summary for everybody so they understand what's happening, the dates and the website and how they can get there. And it's $3.80 for the whole thing?
The whole thing. The website is up now, citizenhearing.org. You can subscribe to the full webcast of the hearing as well as the archive of the hearing at citizenhearing.org. You can see the current list of witnesses. You can see the current list of former members of Congress at citizenhearing.org. The event will go live approximately 8:30 to 8:45 Monday morning, April 29. It will end at the hearing will end at 5 p.m. May 3rd. The last three lectures will end at 10 p.m. May 3rd. We will promote this extensively, and of course afterwards we will promote it extensively, and very shortly after the hearing, extensive promotion of the documentary built around the citizen hearing called Truth Embargo will begin, and you'll see the wrap-up to that. That is the game plan and the principal project of Paradigm Research Group. By the way, the production company that is partnered up with Paradigm Research Group to make the film is Just Cause Entertainment out of Marina Del Rey. And don't we love the name, Just Cause
Entertainment. Yeah. If you get a chance, send me some banners or something so we can promote it.
Absolutely.
Free of charge.
You bet.
We believe in this effort, and I think you've come back with a good answer. And Steve Bassett, you keep on keeping on. We've talked for years.
Seems like Gary, we have. The time just flies, doesn't it, when you're having fun?
Yeah. I'm out of time. Thanks a lot, Stephen. We'll talk to you later.